And we're live with Hal Linden, and I am beside myself. And what are you doing looking like this? How are you looking like this? This is crazy.
The answer is luck. Seriously, my brother had my father's genes. My
Not
father
so good.
lived. My live father lived to be 84. That's a nice one.
Okay,
My
all
brother
right.
lived to be 79. Not bad.
All right.
I have my mother's genes. She lived
How?
to be 98. And I never, as a child, have any recollection of her sick in bed ever. I do not remember her ever sick in bed. So, luck.
What? And so has that, I mean, I just asked you before we went live, what hurts? And you said you're only playing nine holes of golf, but I mean, you look incredible. You look like you're in robust health. I'm assuming that's true.
I'm so far so good.
Oh my God, Hal, you
Far so
look.
good, and I just, right now it's maintenance. Seriously, PT once a week and Pilates once a week, and just trying to stay up and keep going. And that's why, I'm still doing theater. That's my
But
life.
how? All right, I have to ask you. I'm going for. I'm doing a photo shoot next week. An agent found me. I haven't been an actress for a million years. How do you remember lines? How? I'm terrified of this.
There's a limitation. I can't carry a play anymore. I've been asked to do plays where, you're on stage the whole time. No, you're right. I can't carry a whole play. But a hit and run shot, I did the father in Come Blow Your Horn last year.
Right.
Three scenes where you come on, you're on stage for five pages and off. That I can handle.
But you can do it. I mean, you can memorize five pages.
Well, yes, that I could do.
You
Uh,
can.
the the project I'm working on now is called the Journals of Adam and Eve.
Let's talk about it.
And
This is fun.
basically, you walk on with a journal under your arm, put it on a music stand, and you tell the story about what's in the journal. So half the time I'm talking to the audience, reading from the journal, and half the time I'm acting with Eve, who's over there, also doing the same thing. So it's you have the backstop.
You have the backstop, but you do have a lot of it in your head, I'm
Oh yeah,
assuming.
oh yeah. Well, you don't want to be reading to an audience like this, is the point. You don't want to be telling an audience what it says there with your head down in the book. So you look at the thing and then you tell it to the audience, and you tell them again every so often. You check it out to tell them it can be done. It can be done.
And I read your reviews when you did it with Sally Struthers, and it's Ed Weinberger's play, who did Taxi and Mary Tyler Moore and your reviews. Oh my, you did it at the Gary Marshall Theater. What reviews you got, the three of you?
In my entire life, I never got reviews like that.
Well, how come only a hit and run?
Well, we only did it because we were working on it. We never did it in front of an audience. So he got a theater and got an audience just to see what it's like. Could have been a big bore and everybody would have gone home and that would have been the end of it. But it wasn't. It really
I see.
resonated. He's in the process, Ed is in the process now of finding a theater and doing it. We're heading for
You're
Flat Rock,
doing
Bluff,
it Flat Rock. Where
Flat
is
Rock,
Flat
North
Rock?
Carolina, and Western North Carolina. There's a local theater. It's a state theater.
You did something at Flat Rock already.
The last Ed Weinberger play we did at
The
Flat
Jews, two Jews talking, you did there, right?
Rock.
Yeah.
And that was brought to St. Clements in New York. We did it there for a while. To also good reviews. So Ed knows how to write.
Ed knows how to
Ed
write.
writes funny, no question about it. This one is a little more than Two Jews Talking, which was ju basically just funny. This is,
Yeah.
of course, the story of Adam and Eve, and even though it's well, let me put it this way. Milton wrote the poetic version, Paradise Lost,
Right.
and Mark Twain wrote the kind of country version, The Diary of Adam and Eve. This is kind of a more up-to-date, contemporary look, maybe a little X-rated. He hits all the spots, but it also has the death of Abel in there. You know, that's, you don't make, that's not funny. So it's funny, touching. Well, I think it's very viable, and we're working on it. We're gonna, we now have Mary Lou doing it.
Mary Lou Henner, which is
We've got
fantastic.
a stand-up rehearsal here. Then we go to North Carolina to do it at Flat Rock, and then hopefully by then we've got a theater somewhere to set it down and do it. Because I think it's a viable property.
This is fantastic. And is it a full evening of theater?
Yes. Oh yeah. Well, it's one act, around
Yeah.
about an hour and a half, something like that.
Perfect.
Yes, perfect indeed.
You know, we're old. We need a bath. We can't sit longer than an hour and a half. That's all I got. That's
And you can't do more than an hour and a half because of the bathrooms.
this is what I'm saying. An hour and a half. That's it. And attention spans are shorter. You know, because they just are. Attention spans are shorter now. So I was saying to you before we went live, and I have to say it to everybody. If you have you forget if you must go to YouTube and you must watch Hal sing Sons, and you did it on the Ed Sullivan Show. Oh my God, you did it on the Ed Sullivan Show. And in those days when you did a variety show, they let you do the whole thing. You did the whole number.
Right.
I had goosebumps. I was crying. You are so magnificent in the Rothschilds. It's why you won a Tony Award.
Thank you.
Oh my God.
I just want to tell you that acting is an executive art form. You execute other people's creativity. Remember, the concept of sons was come up with by Harnack and Bach, not by Hal. So yes, execution, I'll take credit for it, but the quality of the piece is
Magnificent. And Robbie Benson, we were discussing one of your sons. And who was the other one you said? I
well, I
can't.
had a whole bunch of sons. I had Timmy Jerome,
A Carradine.
Chris Sarandon
Chris Sarandon, that's
was one of my
right.
sons, and Paul Hecht was one of my sons, and Paul in the show marries Jill Clayburgh.
Jill Clayburgh is in the
And it was a
show.
magnificent cast.
Unbelievable. You are just so tell me.
Oh, I may have been too good. I'm serious. I'm serious. When we went out of town to go to Detroit, I went to my agent's office to say goodbye, and she said, "How's it going?" And I swear to you, this is what I said to her. If I do my job well, it won't work. Yes, because
What?
such was the script. My character in the beginning died at the first act curtain, and the second act was about the five sons. That's a wonderful literary concept, but it's not a very good theatrical concept. You cannot ask an audience to at the intermission reinvest its emotional chips. They've been following my character all along, and all of a sudden he's dead, and they got five other kids to watch it. So the exercise out of town was I kept getting older, older and older. They put a number in the second act. They had me attending a conference that I was dead when it happened. Historically dead, but they kept me alive anyway. The inside joke was if we added one more out of town stop, I would have made it to the final curtain. But I got halfway through. In any case, the point is that the score was magnificent. The book had construction problems that we couldn't solve, and it was a terrific experience.
It's just magnificent. And did your parents live to see you
Oh,
win
yeah.
the Tony Award?
Yes.
How thrilling.
Well, my mother did, certainly. She's lived to see me pass way past after three or four different series on television. She lived 98. My father died just after that in the early 70s. So she
He
just
didn't live to see Barney Miller.
He died just as I went to California to do the second pilot. There was the first pilot of Bonnie Miller didn't sell, but there was a second pilot done in 1974, five, four, five, I don't remember. And he died just before I left. He never
Wow.
did see, he saw the pilot of Bonnie, the one pilot that did not sell, but he
But
missed
he
it.
knows. He knows. Just like my father knows, I'm sitting here with you, and I have to tell the story to everybody if they don't know it. But my father was a Borscht Belt master of ceremonies, which we're going to talk about the Catskills and what you were doing there. And my father did the Borscht Belt for all my life and most of his. And he got to introduce you at the Yiddish Theater. And my father was a singer like you, and a crooner, and handsome as hell like you, and a full head of white hair like you, big dimples. He was a great singer, and he got to
And
sing a
what name did he go
song,
by?
Larry Katz,
Larry Katz.
and he introduced you, and not a big deal for you, but a huge deal for him. And you were one of his heroes, and he got to introduce you, and I'm telling you, he was flying for months over that. It thrilled him. And
I was a Borscht Belt saxophone player.
okay, so all right, but you started out on the clarinet, which my father also started out on, which I played the clarinet, and my future son-in-law is a multi-instrumentalist and plays the clarinet, the saxophone. So, all right, so why did you start playing the clarinet? Were your all right, your father was not musical though, was
Father
he?
was not a musician. No, nobody in the family was musical. My father was kind of the patriarch in the family. He loved to go to concerts, but he didn't know the first thing about music. So the first thing he wanted to do was make sure that we, when we went to concerts, would be able to appreciate concerts better. So there were eight male cousins, four in one family, two in one family, and two in another family. As I say, my father was kind of the patriarch of all of them. And he's decided that we should all study music. And at one point, of those eight, I was the youngest. Of those eight, there were five professional musicians. He never intended that to happen. And excuse me, not just professional musicians. First chair viola of the NBC Symphony, concertmaster of the Goldman Band. My brother was a violist all his life in major symphonies, ended up one of the well-known viola teachers in America. So the music was, it was assumed that I was going to be a musician. I never set foot on a stage in high school. I never set foot on a stage in college. I had absolutely no interest in theater. I was a professional musician from the age of 15. I joined the musicians union, and at the age of 15, I was the band leader at 15 years old.
Was how were you the band, like, how did you even,
You
like,
got
it
it. You
wasn't
got it.
even legal for you to.
No, it wasn't. But you got to remember, at age 15, the World War II was still on. Just it had been over in Germany, but not yet in Japan, and musicians weren't home yet. So at age 15, I went to an agency and got myself a job. Got a band together, and we played the Borscht Belt. That, as I say, at age 15, I appointed myself boy singer. That's how I got to start singing.
Okay, so did you have, so you were a classically trained
Classically trained.
clarinetist.
If I
And
had
how
this,
about singing? Did you study singing?
not then, not then. I was the band singer. I was band singer with Boyd Rayburn and Sammy Kaye,
Sammy Kay, I
Ray
remember.
McKinley, Bobby Sherwood. I played with all of them
Do
as
you
a
remember where
band.
in the Borscht Belt you performed? Nah.
One was called Paramount Lodge, I remember.
My father did the Paramount Lodge when
I
he was the
played.
MC there for like at the very beginning of his career.
I remember that.
Wow.
Yeah. No, and I played a lot of places up as a musician. And when I got into theater, which wasn't until I got out of the army.
Okay, so you're a classically trained clarinetist. Now, how did you become a saxophonist from being a clarinetist?
Hormones. Hormone. I discovered at a very early age that more girls went to dances than went to concerts. Totally hormone driven. And that's how I got into and that's the way I stayed, as I say, into the army. I was in an army band in Virginia. Had no interest in theater.
So now, how did you transfer instruments? Did you take lessons? Did you you yeah
Musician, oh yes, from fine teachers, oh yeah.
saxophone is you did it
Saxophone?
was it a, difficult transition to go from clarinet to saxophone?
No, not really. No,
I
but
mean, I watched you play some clarinet today. Wow.
it destroyed my classical career. Let me put it this way: if I had had any personal discipline at that point in my life, I probably would have spent my life in the first chair of a major symphony. I was that good as a clarinet player. But again, hormone driven into jazz.
Yeah, but you still, I had my future son-in-law watch you play clarinet today. You were playing some Dixieland, and you can still play the hell out of it.
I
Now,
still
you
play.
didn't play all those. You haven't played your whole life, have you?
What happened is strange. Once I went into theater, I was afraid that I would be lured back. I was not a major success. I was working on edges. I was the understudy on
Yeah,
Broadway.
you understudied a long time.
I
Yes, I
was
know that. We're
working like
gonna.
crazy in every aspect of theater just to make a living, trying to make a career. And I was afraid, honestly, that I'd be lured back. I'm constantly getting calls. Listen, are you still working? Geez, we'd need, because I was the singing saxophone player. I was
The tall, handsome drink of water singing
that's right.
saxophone player.
And I was afraid I'd get lured back into it, and I wanted to concentrate on theater. So I put the horn away for 20 years. I didn't touch
Wow.
horn.
Both of them?
Both of them. I never really got back to the saxophone, but what happened was, you talk about Dixieland. I was doing a television special. This was after Barney, of course. I was the guest of the Captain and Tennille
I watched that today.
in a special where I played the clarinet.
Well, you played the Dixieland clarinet, yes.
And he, now I had not played for 20 years, where we
Oh
sat around
my
the table.
God.
And we were talking about what I was going to do on the show. And I said, you know, you're going to New Orleans, you're going to shoot in New Orleans. I think I could probably play a little Dixieland. Bow. I don't have to tell you. Two numbers. They got them scheduled. And we got back to, I had to go practice pretty quick. No.
You killed it. And my
Never.
son-in-law, who's very fussy, said, he's legit, which is the biggest compliment you could possibly get.
I know that. I know that. The point was not the fingers, not the brain, but the muscles here.
Really?
If you know, the first number we did, the Dixieland number, was they hired a Dixieland band. That was their arrangement, more or less. I listened to it, and I said, okay, I'll play it. And I played it with them. We shot it. The first take was terrific. Then he said, listen, we missed a few shots. Let's do take two. Take two was terrific. Take five, take nine, take 12, take
Oh my
21.
gosh.
And by the time we finished, they kept changing the camera angle.
I
These muscles were. So if
oy.
you listen again to the number where I played behind Tony, a lot of air coming out.
You sounded great.
I pulled the horn in my mouth. But
You
the point
sounded
is,
great.
once I started playing again, I got it back pretty much. I've done Mozart with symphonies, so
Wow.
I.
That okay, so you're a musician, you're playing these instruments, you go into the army. What at this point makes you want to be an actor?
Okay, talk about luck. But having my mother's genes, here's luck. I played in the band, and on weekends we played the officers' club and the service club. That was my expertise. I sang with, and we had a piano player who knew all my keys and knew everything. And he used to get borrowed by a special services unit in Washington, D.C. Every time they wanted to do a show, they would borrow him. And one day he just turned to me and said, "Listen, you want to sing a song in the show? I'll have him borrow you too." I said, "Okay." And I went. And now I'm on stage, not, no sax hanging around my neck. Now it's very different and very seductive, if you will. Now, for the rest of my life, I've had this nagging what in my mind? What if he didn't ask me? I didn't ask him. What if he didn't ask me? Would I ever have thought about the stage? I doubt it. I was ready to go back into the music business when I got out of the army. But I had this one experience where they asked me to do two lines in a sketch, for instance, and I remember I did it, no fear.
Really?
No fear at all. And got a laugh, very seductive.
Yes.
Laugh at you. I remember physically walking on that stage to the warmth of the lights. How warm the like the stage said, "Welcome, come on home." So when I got out of service, it also happened to be be exactly the same time as the end of the big band era. 1954, I got out of the army. When I went in, there was
Benny Goodman.
Benny was not there anymore in 19.
No?
You know,
Okay.
but
Well.
Woody Herman and Stan Kenton and Sorta Finnegan. It was the top of the big band era. When I got out, they were all gone. It was Bill Haley and the Comets. And I didn't know if that music was my music. So I said, "Well, let me find out about the theater." And
And so how did you pursue it, Hal? Did you study?
I actually went to the American Theater Wing for one semester.
But you had gone to the High School of Music and Art, correct?
No, as a musician, purely never set foot on the stage at the high school where they had a theater program, and
Oh,
a lot of
yes.
people came out and went into theater. But I studied singing, actually. I was a crooner, basically. So in those days, you didn't have mics in your hair. You know, you had about the maybe some at the foots, but that was it. So I had to learn how to sing louder to get into a Broadway chorus. That's all I sent wanted to do.
How about dancing?
And I went to dance classes, ballet, modern,
So how long did you study when you got out of the army? How long did you study before you started auditioning?
Well, I st started immediately, but I took my first audition about 2 months later, and I got
Wow.
the summer stock. I got the
You got your first part, didn't you?
no, it wasn't a part. I was in the chorus
Okay.
of a summer stock tent, which in those days did its own productions. There were no traveling companies in those days. So the very first year, in one summer, I did, I think, 10 complete Broadway musicals. Now, I was mostly in the chorus, but occasionally in a line here or there, a little character. I had 10 shows under my belt by the time I got back to town.
Wow. Okay, so 1957, you come back to Broadway, you
By
get
55, I
understudy.
started. By 1957, I got the understudy in Bells Are Ringing. That was it.
So now, is that a thrilling thing? Is that I imagine it's thrilling, but at the same time a little frustrating, no?
Frustrating.
Well, to be an understudy, because did you get
Well,
to go on? How did you get to go on?
My very first play was Bells Are Ringing, spelled
Right.
Billie Holiday. I was in summer stock when it was a running show. His standby, not understudy, standby. Standby is that was his only job, was to be ready to play that part. When he was leaving, I was going with a girl who was in the show, and she went to the stage manager and said, "I know somebody I think would be really great for that understudy." And I had to travel all the way into New York from summer stock just to audition for the stage manager before I could get the audition.
Wow.
Didn't have an agent. This was all, I was a chorus boy in summer stock.
How old are you when this is going
24,
on?
25.
You're a kid, yeah.
Well, right out of the army, let's put it that way, after college, my army duty.
What did you study in college?
First music, and when it became apparent I wasn't learning anything new, or wasn't that was going to help me, you really study to be a music teacher when you study music. It doesn't help the actual performance. Anyway, then I did a business degree to waste of time. Anyway, the point is, I finally got the job as the understudy. I was going to go into the chorus, but first they were going to teach me the part, just so that I would be ready to go on necessary. I started on a Monday with the stage manager and a book. And on Saturday morning, we had the first understudy rehearsal with the other understudies. In the middle of it, the stage manager came out and said, "Keep going, kid, because you're on today." So I made my first step on a Broadway stage, playing the leading role opposite Judy Holliday in Bells Are Ringing.
My
By Monday, after that, they put me. They raised me from understudy to standby because it was a longer term contract. Understudy, I could quit in 2 weeks, but as a standby, I'd be on. And I eventually ended up playing the part opposite Judy.
Wow. And so what was Judy like? 'Cause she was portrayed as a dumb blonde, and I'm sure she was not a dumb blonde. It
Well,
takes brains to play a dumb blonde, doesn't it?
she loved Scrabble. Loved Scrabble. Nobody ever beat her at Scrabble. She would pass the thing, get a new tile, and then all of a sudden here comes this seven-letter word, on triple triple. Judy was a very bright and giving
I
person.
was going to say, how was she with you, this new kid on Broadway?
Excuse me, I had met her once, and the next time I met her was on stage.
Oh my God. So how was she with you? I mean, did you know what you were doing that first show when you're, did you feel confident? Were you afraid?
First of all, I said I was going with a girl who was in the show.
Yeah.
So that means I had seen it a lot of times. By the time, every time I went to pick her up, I'd come with her, I'd see the last half of the second act. All the ushers knew me. I could walk in and out anytime, so I saw the show a lot. I really knew the show really quickly. And no fear. I never had fear. When I'm prepared, there's no fear.
Wow.
The only time I've ever been frightened was when I was unprepared, when I just didn't do enough rehearsal, didn't do enough.
I can relate to that.
Never had fear on a stage. It's wild. It's like, and I can't explain it. It's like home. I'm telling you, that warmth of the lights said, "You're home."
Do what you said before that if that guy wouldn't have said that to you, would this have been your life? And I believe it would have been. I believe that everything happens for a reason,
Yeah,
personally.
I'm not that religious. I think life is accidental.
Do you?
Sure.
Somebody just asked if they ever considered you for the movie instead of Dean Martin.
Are you kidding? At that point, the first of all, I was the understudy who played, was on stage with Judy with the last, what, 3 months on in New York, and maybe 2 3 months on the road. That was it. Nobody knew who I was, as opposed to Dean Martin. I was in the movie, by the way, in
Were
another part.
you?
Yes. There was a one scene where there was a nightclub singer, and Judy suggested me because she knew I was in town.
That's wonderful. Okay, so you do you have so but you understudy at different shows for no,
What
you,
happened was,
yeah.
because I was so successful as an as the standby going on in Bells Are Ringing, that became my job for the next decade, if you really want. Because I didn't have a name. Casting on Broadway would be get somebody from the who's hot from television or movies. He'd be
Right.
the man, but get Hal Linden to cover him. So I did, I don't know, 10, 8 Broadway shows in the next decade.
Wow.
Understudying. I used to say everybody and his uncle, till I once did a television special where we dealt with that, and I realized I understudied Alan Alda and Robert Alda. So make that everybody and his father.
Instead of in his brother. That's great. And so, but would you get to audition for the roles?
Yes, Sheldon Harnick was a big fan. I knew Sheldon from off Broadway. I did Anything Goes off Broadway, and Margie Gray was in it, and Sheldon was courting Margie, so he was there every night, like I was
Right.
in back of, and so we became friendly, and he had me audition for everything he did.
Wow.
I didn't, but I never got the job. I didn't get. Fiddler on the Roof. I didn't get She Loves Me. I didn't get, there was another one in there somewhere. I didn't get Apple Tree. I ended up replacing an Apple Tree. And that's kind of started it, where I had, where I wasn't just the understudy, but I could do a, create a role. And that led to the Rothschilds, who was also Sheldon
Okay,
Harnick.
so how did the Rothschilds happen? How was that role yours?
Again, Sheldon was became a friend because he used to come down to the theater. We met backstage while he was waiting for Margie, and he appreciated my work in Anything Goes. As I said, he had me audition for everything he did, but so I was always in Sheldon's mind, I suspect. And when I remember visiting him in Long Island, he had a summer house out in the Hamptons, and we were out there for some reason, I don't know. And we visited him, and he said, "Listen, we're working on a musical, and I think there's a part for you in it." And that was kind of it, He f that far back had me in mind for the Patriot.
Wow.
So he gave me the shot. I will always be, well, grateful for his friendship, but also grateful for his help in my career. He was a terrific human being.
Did life change? Right, life had
Just
must have
died, by the way.
changed.
Just died last
Oh, I'm
year,
sorry.
97 or 8. So,
Wow.
yeah.
That's a life well lived. So life must have changed right there, I imagined.
Then luck, a producer happened to be in town, and or a writer producer from television, and I've heard different stories about why he went to see the Rothschilds, but he did. He told me that it was coincidental that he didn't intend to, but his kids were going that day, and he had the day off. And the director said, "Go with your kids," and we went to see the show, and never came backstage. Never sent me a note. Never. I didn't know he existed until
Wow.
2 years later when they was casting Barney Miller. My agent said, "You have an offer to do pilot." But he remembered me and wanted me to do that part from having seen the Rothschilds.
No audition, just you
No,
haven't.
no audition. And interestingly enough, I had Three offers that year. I had just won the Tony for the Rothschilds. So there was a lot of interest in my, and I had three television things. And we chose Barney, did the first pilot, which didn't sell. But then this producer managed to get two more episodes. And at the same time, I had the offer to do a starring role on Broadway. So here was
But
a
clearly
job.
no regrets. What was the show? Do you remember what the show was on Broadway?
I can't remember the name of it, but it was, I can't remember the name of it. I'm sorry.
And did either of the two other offers you had, did either of them
No.
become anything?
No. I picked the right one there.
You picked the
But
right
the
one.
point was, what I was offered a Broadway show, a leading Broadway show. That's 4 weeks rehearsal, 8 weeks out of town. You got it's a half a year at least, even with
Right.
mom, as opposed to two episodes. That's all we could guarantee.
Wow.
And
You had a feeling?
can't
Had you had read the
feeling
script?
I remember
Obviously, you
was.
had read the script.
Well, I knew the concept. I made the first
Right. You had made the pilot.
pilot, so I knew the concept, and I thought it wasn't a question of that. I remember sitting in my manager's office, and the word was, "You got to decide on the Broadway show. They're moving ahead. They've got to know by close of business Friday." And I remember sitting in the office, and as cavalierly as this, I said, "All right, listen, we've done Broadway. Let's try television." It was that cavalier. I went out, did the two pilots. They picked it up, and that was Barney Miller. The two extra episodes. Yeah. There's a lot of luck in this business.
Now, okay, so you're a married man and you've got kids at this point, right?
Four kids raised up
You've got, all right, you've got
in
four
Broadway.
kids and you're rolling the dice.
That's it.
But your wife was an actress, so she understands. She
The lady,
understood.
excuse me, the lady who got me, who was in Bells Ringing,
Was your
50,
wife, became your
52,
wife.
53 years.
Unbelievable. So I'm assuming, so she's on your side. She's okay with you rolling those dice.
It's all a roll of the dice.
It's all a
Every
roll of the, because even a Broadway show, you could
moment.
open and close in one night. You don't know.
That's right.
No,
And it's
so I.
my history. My history was opening and closing in one night. That's how you'd get to do eight Broadway. I think it was about eight Broadway musicals in one decade.
Oh my
Eight.
God. Wow.
Because they all closed. They all.
Okay, so now you do the first Barney Miller pilot. It doesn't get picked up. When you do it, some of those cast, some of the cast is different, right? It's not
Oh,
Max
one of the cast.
Gale, it's not.
The only two were me and Abe. It was a different Wojo, a different character, different Ron Harris was new. Max Gale was new. Everybody was new except me, and even the wife was new.
Okay, so now do you know when you do that first pilot, after the first pilot, do you still think this is good?
I thought it was good stuff even in the first pilot.
Even in the first pilot. And
Yeah.
the Barney Miller character, how much of that is Hal?
I guess a piece of every part you play is you,
Sure.
because you see it, you see the character's wants and needs through your eyes and how you would
Sure.
react in order to achieve what you're trying to achieve in life. I once asked, Danny Arnold was the producer of Barney Miller, and he's the one who just offered me the part, period, no audition or nothing. I said, you know, why me? That's when he told me the story about going to see the Rothschilds. And he said, he wanted to imbue the character of Barney with a sense of Talmudic justice.
Wow.
That is, he'll be the character to say, death, but for the grace of who knows what, go all of us. Good side of the desk, bad side of the desk. We're all human beings. And that equanimity, that sense of justice is what he had wanted. That's what he saw in Maya Rothschild. And that's why he offered me the part, no audition, no nothing. So
wow.
In a sense, is that how? I don't know if I'm that, that kind of equanimity, but that was the character, that was the quality that he was looking for, that he
well,
saw.
Just talking to you for this amount of time and the couple of times on the phone and everything that everyone has told me, there's a lot of Hal in there. There's no doubt about it. You're a lovely man. And Barney is somebody, Barney, everybody loves Barney Miller and everybody loves Hal Linden. There's some there. I mean, there's definitely something there.
I don't have any horses in the race. I don't have any end result I'm looking for. I approach every day. What was your favorite role? Famous question you constantly ask all your life. It was said of me, when he's not near the role he loves the role he's near. Whatever you're working on, you're digging the same dig. Success, failure. I've done so many different characters, so many different parts, but you put the same love into every one of them. You put
Now,
the
how do you approach a role, Hal? Is there a way? What's your way? Do you have a way in when you're preparing for a role?
And in a sense, there's, I think the first thing is kind of a psychiatric breakdown of the character. What's he looking for? What's he wanted to accomplish? What's his end result? What does he want to be? What does he want to do? And how does he go about doing it? And how does these scenes help him go about doing it? So once you have that skeleton, that's why I said, if I'm prepared and I got that skeleton, that's what could go wrong on a stage. If I forget this line, I know what I'm doing. I know why I want to be there. I'll just say something else that fits the moment. So it takes care of a lot of fear and a lot of anxiety if you've got that skeleton to hang on to.
Was there a lot of improvising going on that set?
Oh, no. No, no,
No.
no. Barney,
No.
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 There was, but we never shot it. Because the it was improvisation towards the script. I mean, we might paraphrase temporarily to go, but we always went back to the script, because
right.
Say what you want, Barney was the result of exquisite writing.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Exquisite writing, direction, performing, all of it. It was
performance.
Perfect. It was
performance
perfect.
Was time. Everybody knew who they wanted to be. Here's an example. You say, how do you approach a part? The part that Max Gale played.
By the way, I just have to say, Max Gale, I love you. Max delivered you unto me, and he is just the sweetest man, the loveliest man.
Unfortunately, we're the only two left. Believe that?
Oh, God.
Anyway, the point I'm getting at is the original character who played that part, I think it was called Kaczynski rather than Wojciechowicz, was played much more like a Polish joke. He was kind of that over the top. The reason they gave him Kaczynski, if you remember, in those days, there were Polish jokes.
Sure, of course.
That was the jokes. Max came in with his own attitude. When he said, no, he can't be a guy who knows what he doesn't know. Therefore, he wants to learn. You know, and that
it was a sweet innocence that he had.
Exactly. And a desire to learn everything, which is a different approach from.
Very endearing. Very endearing. It was
very
very
endearing.
endearing. Yes.
But how you approach it. ends up how you how it comes out. Fascinating. It's a wonderful business.
And so for you, for Barney, did you make conscious choices for him that were not Hal?
I don't even think of Hal. I only think of Barney. Walked into the office where they had the pictures on the wall. The first thing you do is check out all the pictures and decide who those people are. And make a life, a creative, create a whole family. It was my uncle who was a police officer. That's why I became a police officer. You know, make up the stories about your uncle so you know who you are, and then you just can behave as that person who you know. Who, interestingly enough, once he said, one day he told me about the concept of Talmudic justice, I had to rename a lot of people on that wall.
Because then, so Barney Miller was Jewish.
Yes, and specifically Jewish. I think there are references in the along the way about toward the high holidays or something, holidays. No, he didn't back off it. He went right into, he wanted that quality, that specific quality. Yeah.
Well, and so, okay, so the relationships that you had with each of the, I think I told you when we chatted that Steve Landisberg was a customer of mine. He used to live across the street from Maxwell's Plum in New York, and he was so lovely. And he
Yes.
was so dry on the show, so dry and
Did you ever see his stand-up act?
very funny, very different than Barney Miller.
Very different than what he was in Barney. In Barney, very dry, very laid back, very intellectual. On stage as a stand-up, he was madman. He was crazy. So it's not always the person. It's how you set them on their journey and what journey you choose for them.
And how did you all, did you, were you guys, did you all interact in? Did you all interact as yourselves on set? Did you interact in character on set? Like, how were you with each other?
Oh no, it was, everybody knew that they were getting, they had, it was a good script. You get a good script, you don't fool with it. You could tell when there's a, when you're doing a script and you hit a wall, that something went wrong with the script or the construction. But we never hit walls. It was always, they followed the characters that we had built, because a lot of it was the actors' work in playing a part in such a way that the writers would now write to that aspect of the character. So everybody knew it was good stuff. So we first of all, everybody respected everybody else's choice, particularly Barney. I had, you know, I mean, my contribution to Barney was basically reacting to Harris, reacting to Wojo, reacting to Jack Sue. It was all reactive rather than active. So it was not that hard for me.
Yeah, but you being the straight man can be the hardest job of all.
It takes the same sense, comedic sense of timing to be as to have the joke. I'd like to say 8 years of Barney Miller without a punchline.
And how about like Abe Vigoda, who was just also
And you know, Abe went up for a different part when he auditioned.
really?
Yes, there was a an Abe auditioned for the first pilot. There was he had he was coming off Godfather, but he so he went up for a part that was an Italian guy who sat at Jack Sue's desk. The first pilot was an Italian guy there. I can't remember his name, and that was the part he auditioned for. When Danny took one look at his face, he said, "No, I think I got a better idea." And he created this whole character with the deadpan and the,
And were you all good friends? Because you looked like you were good friends.
not socially. We didn't interact socially. No. The closest social friend I had was Danny Arnold, the producer. Not socially, but respect on the set for everybody's decisions and choices. And tremendous respect that way. And that's what made it work. Everybody was able to be creative, creatively execute these the creativity of the writers.
So here, life absolutely changed for you. Now you become a huge star. And now everybody knows your name and everybody recognizes you. And all of a sudden, your kids are a big deal at school and life.
They did love that, I'll tell you that.
They didn't. Why?
Whoa.
Why?
You never know whether your friends want to be your friends or you want to
Oh.
be friends of a daughter of a celebrity. You know what I
I
mean?
see. I
It's
see.
not, it gets a little touchy there.
Yeah.
We went out of our way not to be in the quote celebrity bracket, as it were, to keep it as human and family-like as possible. But you got to do that intentionally. Yeah.
So you did a lot of work after Barney Miller. You will always be Barney Miller. There's no escaping that. I
Okay,
mean,
if you're gonna be identified with a role, let it be a role as
it's a good one. It's a good one. So beloved. But also, you're so beloved as a human being. I was telling you before, Candy Clark mentioned she did When You Coming Back, Red Rider with you. Jack McGee just, oh, please send him my love. Tom Bergeron was like, I got to come over and watch. Sandy Hilberg did a Love Boat with you. Everybody, you are so beloved as a human being, aside from the Barney Miller thing. It's just the way
Don't
you.
overdo
Well,
it. Will
it's the way you've moved through your life, which is so lovely. Any regrets? I mean, okay, so I heard something today that surprised me. You were offered a leading role in a television show that you turned down. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Television show?
Yeah, St. Elsewhere. They
Oh,
offered you,
yes.
right?
But that
Now,
came right on the end of Barney Miller. That was.
why did you turn that down?
I had just done 8 years of television, and in those days, if you were television, you were not movies. A big divide. For some reason, casting people thought of you as a movie actor or as a television actor. And I was looking to do an important movie for somebody. I wanted to do some. I didn't want to go right back. It was right on the edge, when Barney left the air. So I would have had no shot at changing over. That was the only reason. I didn't even read the script, if you really want to know. I said, no, let's not do television. Let's head for movies. Or, as a matter of fact, the first thing I was offered was a new Alan J. Lerner musical on Broadway. I thought, oh, that'll be good. Go from television to go back and to do a new Alan J. Lerner musical on Broadway. So we went back to do that. I never did it because I didn't like it, but it was Alan's major bomb, the one major bomb.
Wow.
Yeah, but
But
I didn't know
you
that.
have done a lot of theater
Since then, yes.
since then, and go and doing one, and you'll be doing in wait, what is it called? What is the name of the town called where you're going?
Rock, North Carolina.
Flat Rock. You're going to Flat Rock, North Carolina.
We're working on on this project, and what you when you're working on a project that has comedy, you need an audience. You have to find out what the
Absolutely.
timing is, what the how best to say the line, you know.
So have you and Marilee, you two haven't sat down to do this together yet?
Only around a table or on Zoom. We're gonna meet, I think, Tuesday. And try it once standing up, and then we leave on Wednesday and next weekend we'll be doing it in Flat Rock.
You know about Merrily's Gift, correct?
Isn't that insane? It's a weird one. That's what she said. You know, the first thing she said when we sat around a table to read it, she said, "You remember when we met? It was August 17th, 1994. I was a Tuesday in." She remembered
She
it.
remember, it's so crazy. Like, if you tell her that you did this show, she probably will be able to tell you not only what day she and I met, but what I ate when we met. And it's crazy
I know
that she
it
does
is.
this
It's a
stuff.
weird
Yeah.
one. And you know, the strange thing, she's not weird herself.
Not at all. She's
Not at all.
lovely.
You know,
She's
that you would think
lovely.
that would affect you as somehow, and you'd come off as a pook or something. But she's a very feet on the ground lady.
She's delightful. I went to her house and did her podcast once, and she came to my house and did mine. And Ed Weinberger had written a book with Ed Asner, and he was supposed to come to my house, and he got sick that day. So we have 2 degrees of Kevin Bacon without Kevin Bacon all over the place. Hal, I am so thrilled. I can't, I'm going to be smiling for a week. Thank you so much for doing this. It is so wonderful to meet you.
Been a pleasure. Thanks for the memories.
I so hope that I get to see the journals of Adam and Eve.
It'll be there. It's too good. It's too good. It'll be somewhere. We'll figure someplace out.
Well, I look forward to it, and I hope I get to meet you no matter what. And thank you so much for doing this. My
Good.
best to you. Bye, Hal.